ज्ञानाञ्जनशलाकाय चक्षुरुन्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः नमः ॐ विष्णुपदाय कृष्णप्रस्थाय भूतले श्रीमते भक्तिवेदान्त स्वामी निति नामिने नमस्ते सरस्वती देवे गौरवाणी प्रचारिणे निर्विशेषा शून्यवादी पश्चात्यते सधारिणे श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैता गदाधर श्रीवासदी गौर भक्तवृंद हरे कृष्णा कृष्ण कृष्ण हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
Your Royal Highness, Lords and Ladies, Members of Parliament, Ladies and Gentlemen, it is my very great honor and pleasure to be with you this evening in this very historic place, the House of Lords of the British Parliament, where so many things that happened throughout history affected the entire world. Thank you so much for being with us this evening. Not too long ago, I accompanied two busloads of teenage people to a forest in Northern California. We walked a distance and came before the largest tree on planet Earth. It was a giant sequoia tree, over 2,200 years old. I asked these teenagers, if this tree, who has seen history from 200 years before Christ appeared on this earth, if he could give humanity a message, what would the tree say? After some humorous remarks from the boys, a 14-year-old girl, she took a deep breath and began to cry with great emotion. We all stood very amazed in total silence. And then she spoke. She said, "This tree is crying out, telling all of us its message. Why do you humans waste so much of your precious lives obsessing over and fighting over such superficial things? Don't you see how short your life actually is? Why are you wasting your time? You should focus on what's actually important. Finding inner fulfillment and love." She spoke with so much emotion that we all were feeling that the tree was actually speaking through her. The most fundamental need for everyone is to love and to be loved. Things could give some pleasure to the senses and to the mind, but they cannot touch the heart. Only love could touch the heart. Therefore, it is said that a cultured society, people love people and they use things. But all too much in this world, people love things and use people to somehow get them and keep them. In the Bible, Lord Jesus said, "What profit will a man have if he shall gain the whole world but loses his own soul?" The first commandment is to love God with all your heart, mind, and soul, and to love your neighbor as yourself. This is the universal principle of humanity. In the Bhagavad Purana, it is said, "Savai pung sang paro dharmo yato paktir dhokshache ahoitaki apratinata yayatma supersiddhati." The supreme dharma, the real essence of all religion and all occupations, is to love our common God. And through that love, to learn to love all living beings. Because everyone is our neighbor. But such love has to be unmotivated by egoism or selfishness, and uninterrupted by any of the ever-changing experiences of this world, in order to actually give satisfaction to the heart. This message is especially crucial today, where there's so many challenges in the name of the economy, politics, religion, and so many other aspects of life. Just last year, I was walking with a friend through another redwood forest in California. It's very quiet. These massive trees, the largest, tallest, biggest trees in the world. We came upon an open area where there was a group of tourists. And a forest ranger was speaking about the underground secret of the forest. I stood behind them and listened very carefully. And what I heard transformed my life. God speaks in such a beautiful way through nature, if we could somehow or other hear. May I tell you? He explained that the redwood trees are the tallest, largest trees on the earth. But their roots do not grow very deep. Usually, big trees need very deep roots to hold them up. The redwood tree only 4, 5, or 6 feet down. So how is it possible that these trees could stand for thousands of years through storms, snow, and massive earthquakes? The underground secret. The roots reach out to the roots of other trees. And when the roots meet, they intertwine with each other. In this way, every tree in the forest is directly or indirectly giving support to to every other tree.
When a new little tree starts growing,
it wraps its roots around these big ancient trees. And they're all getting support from each other. United, we stand. If we want to grow and keep growing, we can learn this lesson from the redwood trees. They care for each other. Humanity must learn to reach out and care for each other. And how is that possible? I'd like to tell a little story from London in 1970, looking for inner fulfillment and a deeper purpose in life beyond sectarian values. Without money, I hitchhiked to the Himalayas in India. It took 6 months. Just a few days ago, I came the same route coming back, and it took about 9 hours. Not as scenic, not as life-changing, but much safer. At least apparently so. When I reached the border of India, it was such a moment in my life. Can you imagine? I hitchhiked 6 months to get there. Many dangers, many diseases, going through Turkey, Iran, Afghanistan, Pakistan. And at the border post, the immigration agent asked me how much money I had. I had a little cloth bag, and I searched through it very carefully and took out everything I had. It was 26 cents in four different currencies. She said, "You need minimum $200 to get into India." I said, "This is all I have. Please let me in." She said, "We have enough beggars in our country. We do not want another one. Go back." Where was I going to go back to? I was in a no man's land between the enemy nations of Pakistan and India, and I didn't have a visa to get back into Pakistan. I begged, I pleaded, I cried. The border guards put guns in my face and said, "Go back." I went a little ways in the no man's land, and I sat under a tree, and I kept coming back, and she kept refusing me. And finally, after about 6 or 7 hours, the border guards changed. And when she was away, I went back to the new man. He was a Sikh soldier. I begged and I cried. And he said, "I have been ordered by my commanding officer to reject you unless you show me money." I said, "I've given up everything of a comfortable home in America. I've risked my life to find the treasures of your great country. Please give me a chance. I promise you, someday I'll try to do something good for your nation." He looked at me with a long stare and said, "Sometimes a man must follow his heart. I am going to give you the chance that you are crying for." And he stamped my passport and put his hand on my head. He said, "May you find what you are yearning for. Welcome to India." It was night. I was all alone. I didn't know where I was going. It was in a forest. I went through the forest, and there was just paddy fields.
I couldn't even find a road. I was just walking through fields. And every star, every leaf, every tree, every crop seemed to be welcoming me home. And I realized that if things come cheaply, we usually take them for granted. But when we really have to struggle for something, according to the nature of the struggle, we understand the value of what we receive. While I was living in the Himalayas, I met one wandering yogi. His name was Kailash Baba. I was just 19 years old at the time, and he was probably in his late 60s or 70s. Although somebody told me he was 150 years old. I don't know. Anyways, he was a giant man. And he taught me how to live in the forest and survive. Something I never learned at the colleges I went to in Illinois. He taught me which caves were nice places to live, how to sleep under trees on riverbanks, and especially there were leopards, panthers, wild elephants, and lots of cobras, vipers, scorpions, and other such animals. He taught me that if you have the slightest fear of them, or if you think yourself to be superior to them in any way, they will kill you. You have to see and respect the living force within them and honor that living force, the Atma. It was interesting. He explained to me in his own way that if you honor and respect them as spiritual beings, they will honor and respect you. He did not speak a word of English, and I didn't speak his language. But because he cared about me so much and he wanted me to learn, and I was so eager to learn, I learned so much from him just by listening to his words without understanding them, or his pointing his finger or raising his eyebrow. Later on, I heard a beautiful verse from my guru, Srila Prabhupada, which explained these things so succinctly. And when I heard this verse, I was thinking, this is it. This is what I've been looking for. This wisdom. This is the greatest need on the planet Earth today, to understand these principles. The verse was, Vidyavanaya sampane brahmani kaviyasti suni chaiva supati cha pandita samadarshana. True knowledge, real wisdom, is not about how much data we store in our brains. True wisdom is the ability to see every living being with equal vision. And my guru Srila Prabhupada explained it in this way. Whether one is black or white or red or yellow or brown, Hindu or Muslim or Christian, or Jewish or Sikh, or Jain or Parsi, agnostic or atheist, or whether one is a human, or an elephant, or a cow, or a dog, or a cat, wherever there is life, there is a sacred part of God. Life is sacred. When we realize the sacredness of who we truly are, then we could recognize the sacredness and offer honor, respect, and love to all beings. We are seeing through our eyes, hearing through our ears, tasting through our tongue. We are animating this body. But we are the witness. And the nature of that Atma or soul is described in the Gita. Krishna tells, Nijayate Mriyate Bhagavachit, that we are eternal, full of knowledge, and full of bliss. And what is the nature of that bliss? Our capacity to love. When there is love for the divine, or for God who has many names and has appeared in many ways throughout history, it's like watering the root of a tree. Naturally, our love extends to every part. When we water the root of the tree, the water reaches all the flowers, the leaves, the branches, and the twigs. And similarly, when we love that root, or that supreme, our beloved, it naturally extends toward every living being. When I heard the first commandment, to love God with all your heart, mind, and soul, and to love your neighbor as yourself, now it really made sense. And I wanted this more than anything else in life. I was thinking, without this, what is the use of everything else in life? Today in the world, we have spent a tremendous amount of energy to discover outer space. But unfortunately, we very much neglected to discover our own inner space. When I was a part of the civil rights movement, I heard the words of Martin Luther King, that if you do not have an ideal you're willing to die for, you have nothing very meaningful to live for. He was speaking about character, values. Here in the great country of the United Kingdom, William Shakespeare wrote, if you lose your wealth, you lose nothing. If you lose your health, you lose something. If you lose your values, you lose everything. William Shakespeare wasn't a Swami either. These are universal principles. In the Ishopadishad of the Vedas, it is described, Ishabhasimidan Sarva, that everything is potentially spiritual. From a spiritual perspective, what is the difference between material and spiritual? Our character. Let us use the example of a knife. A thief will take a knife, kill someone to steal for himself. A surgeon will take the same knife to save a person's life with compassion. Is the knife good or bad? Everything in this world, our abilities, our wealth, our technologies, our sciences, even this microphone, if we use it for our own egoistic, selfish purposes, it's material. But if we understand how to use it in the service of God, in harmony with the will of God, in a spirit of compassion for others, then it is spiritual. And it will do great good for the world. In the Bhagavad Gita, there's a beautiful verse, Bhoktaram Jagatapasam Sarvalokamaheshwaram. Herein, it describes what is wealth. In our tradition, wealth is the energy of Lakshmi, the Supreme Mother and the Goddess of Fortune. Wealth is sacred. When we understand that we are not the proprietors, we are the trustees. And whatever is put under our trusteeship is meant to be utilized for a higher purpose. Our dear Shruti Dharma gave a beautiful quote that to make a living, we get things, but to make a life, we give. And it is explained that if you want to actually know how rich you are, you should find out how many things you have that money cannot buy. That is real wealth. Love. Bhaktivinoda Thakur was a saint in India, devotee of Krishna. He had 10 children. His wife was as saintly as he was, Bhagavati. And he was honored even by renunciates, monks. He was a judge during the British regime in India. And even British lords came and respected him because of his character. He wrote that when you discover that inner potential love that is your very essence, then it manifests as compassion for all beings. People talk about loving God, but seeing everyone with equal vision and being an instrument of humility, forgiveness, and compassion is the actual testimony that there's love of God that has been awakened within us. When I was living in the bank of the Ganges in India in 1971, there was an old man, 85 years old. His name was Narayan Prasad. He was a Hindu, devotee of Ram. And every day he would take me to see his best friend, whose name was Mohammed. He owned an X-ray clinic. And we would speak for about an hour every day. Mohammed would speak from the Quran. Narayan Prasad would speak from the Bhagavad Gita and the Ramayana. And I would speak whatever things I was learning all over the place. But the interesting thing is everybody was learning from each other, getting inspired from each other. And one day while I was sitting on the bank of the Ganges with Narayan Prasad, I asked him, how is it possible that in a country like India, where there's so much conflict between Hindus and Muslims, that you're best friends? I'll never forget what he told me. In fact, I repeat him in hundreds of lectures every year. May I repeat it again? He said a dog will recognize his master however the master dresses. Yes, might be in a bow tie. He may be in a t-shirt and jeans. He may be in underpants. He may be naked. But the dog will recognize, this is my master. If we cannot recognize our beloved Lord when that Lord comes in a different dress, in a different form, to different people throughout history, in different parts of the world, then we have so much to learn from a dog. In this ever-changing world, it's very challenging to maintain our integrity. What is integrity? Integrity means that we embrace our sacred ideals even when faced with temptations, that if we give them up, we could get so much, or fear that if we don't give them up, we will lose so much. When we learn and teach our children that our values are our true wealth, then only will this world actually prosper. Economically, politically, in religion, in education, in every other aspect of life. This world is composed of dualities. There's success, failure, honor, dishonor, pleasure, pain, victory, defeat. How in all these dualities and all these changes can we maintain this integrity? By giving time to develop a strong foundation. This incredible historic building, the House of Parliament. We're marveling over the incredible ceiling, the gold leafing, the wallpaper, the paintings, the draperies, the carpeting, the architecture, the stone carvings. But how many of us are actually coming and saying, what an incredible foundation this building has? We don't see it. It's like the roots of the redwood tree, but the foundation holds up everything. Spirituality is about giving time and energy to cultivating a strong spiritual foundation where we can remain equipoised with fulfillment and integrity, even in the face of great storms in life.
Okay.
Wherein we see even what apparently is a curse to be a blessing, an opportunity. This is the sign of true human greatness. To see trials and failures as opportunities to grow. Tat tat adi evetaro jana. The Gita tells that what leaders of society do establishes the example for the common people. This is such a desperate need for the world, for leaders to really set examples of true moral and spiritual values. In my life, I found such an example in Srila Prabhupada, our guru. It was spoken before how when he was 70 years old, he was on this cargo ship for 37 days. He had heart attack, seasickness, and he wrote a beautiful prayer when he was just approaching New York. How, my Lord, how can I serve all these people? Please give me the words to make them happy, to relieve them from suffering. And he inspired people in such a way. When he came to England in 1969, he inspired George Harrison. And he was the one who actually purchased for our society the Bhaktivedanta manner. He was inspired to utilize what God had given him to educate and inspire humanity in a wonderful, wonderful way. And on this occasion, in this great place of the House of Lords, we are celebrating the 40th anniversary of this offering of love